Hi, thank you everybody for coming. So first off, it is it's nice to learn at 8:15 p.m.
Yeah, for us too.
There's Mesiras Nefesh on both sides, but 8:15 is a little bit more pleasant. So, and it's good to see people in person. That really is it's very different than looking at a screen. So thank you so much for coming. Okay, I want to share with you an idea by the Nesiva Shalom tonight. I had plans for this chabura on many levels. One was to do the entire prep on the airplane. Didn't happen. I watched 3 movies and a lot of turbulence.
Anything good?
You watched the movie Turbulence.
On the airplane.
Yeah. It's funny. There was I've never had so much turbulence in my entire life flying career. Wow. But I kept saying to myself, "Rav Schechter is on this plane." Ooh. So I was like, "God's not taking us down." All right. So I'm hoping that there's someone chashev on the plane on the way back, and that there is no turbulence. But on Shabbos last week, I was like, "No matter what, there has to be a topic because I'm not bringing Sfarim with me, so it has to be set." So I saw a nice idea by the Nesiva Shalom. And then today, found a couple other things to add to it. So, the parasha starts off, Vayishma Yidro Kohen Midyan Chotein Moshe Kol Asher Asah Lo Kim Moshe Yisrael Amo Ki Yotzi Hashem Yisrael Mimitzrayim. It's a very long pasuk. So, Yidro, the Kohen Midyan, the father-in-law of Moshe, he heard all that God had done to Moshe and to Yisrael Amo. Because he had taken them out of, he had taken the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. Vayikach Yitro Chotein Moshe et Tzipora Eshet Moshe achar shiluchaha. So Yitro, the Chotein Moshe, takes Tzipora, the wife of Moshe achar shiluchaha, after she was sent away. Where Sachs points out that shiluchaha is, it's from the language of a divorce, right? There is some sort of divorce-ish that might have already happened when they get to Mitzrayim the first time. And the two sons the name of the first one was Gershom, because he said Ger Hayiti be'eretz Nachuya, that I was a stranger in a strange land. And the second one's name was Eliezer, because the God of my father saved me from the sword of Paro. Yeah.
Just a funny thing I saw. They're both referred to as Shem HaEchad. Mm-hmm. But Miriam and Yocheved were Shem HaShem, Shem HaShem. First and second. These are one is called and one is called. Is there anything to that, or just... I mean, something to it, certainly, because it could be written the same way. But I don't know if it's...
Right. It's a good question. Maybe it's supposed to say that... Maybe it's supposed to indicate that they're equal, which would not be impressive, because neither one of them turns out to be anything... Right.
Equally unimpressive?
Right.
It must be because they had to reintroduce them completely again from being introduced before.
Right.
Because we forgot who they were.
Yeah, it's a little sad. I mean, to me, it's a little sad because I feel like Moshe Rabbeinu I haven't given a drasha in Israel just yet, because one of the requirements is to do it fully in Hebrew, and I just I don't know, I feel like the people that do it in Hebrew that speak Hebrew like me, they're not very good. It's about as flat a drasha as it gets. So I'd rather just listen. I feel bad for Moshe, because I think that in a certain sense, Judaism doesn't believe that our leaders don't get married and don't have children and all that. We believe in that they do, and they're people of the people and all that. But Moshe Rabbeinu is not really, Moshe Rabbeinu has this component to him where he's not supposed to be like everybody else, but he has these kids beforehand, and so they kind of lose out, that they don't really have a dad, because Moshe Rabbeinu is everybody's dad. And that's, to me, that's kind of sad, but it just is what it is. Okay, pasuk hey, vayavo Yitro chutin Moshe, v'nav yishto el Moshe, el hamidbar, sher hu chonesh sham har elokim. So he comes to har elokim, the mountain of God. Okay, so I have a couple questions, but before I ask any of them, does anybody have any of their own questions?
I think the first two already asked.
Which one? The Shem Hach?
The Echad and Echad.
Okay.
Why are we reintroducing completely the description of Yisro and Gershom and...
All right, so Gershom, I think we actually know his name already, but we don't know Eliezer's name. This is the first mention of it. But yeah, the shame and the shame is a good one. Why are we reintroducing Yitro and all of the things that come with it? I think that's a very, very important question. Why do we need all the descriptions of Yisro? Is it really necessary? And there's so much repetition. The amount of times it's Chotein Moshe, Chotein Moshe.
And the trup is the same.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And twice.
Right. So yeah. So that's a question, definitely a question to deal with.
We're assuming the
Shnei Baneha, her daughters, or her sons.
You meaning as opposed to
their or his?
But I think that's because Yitro comes with Tzipora, the wife of Moshe, the et Shnei Baneha.
Right. Right. So it may have confusing. We think that he sent her away, I guess, before the Mako. I mean, she came with him. Right?
So. I think that the general accepted pshat is they get, it's not in the psukim, but I think it's the medrash. They get, and it makes sense. They get to the hotel. Weird stuff happens in the hotel, whatever that is. They leave the hotel. They set out to Mitzrayim, and they bump into Aaron. Aaron, which, again, all of that is in the text. And then Aaron says, are you out of your mind? Like, where everybody's suffering. You don't bring children into a place like that. You're right. So he says to Tzipora, go back. So Tzipora goes back with the two kids.
The order of who's coming sort of mixed up.
Meaning that Banav should be last?
Well, besides that, it's also, if you sort of close to Moshe, and then it says Uvanav. So Uvanav, who's son?
It's not the greatest
what?
Word.
You have
to.
I mean,
he raised them. It's like almost like
he's
going to raise them.
It's not
no.
Chotein Moshe.
No,
it's
Chotein Moshe,
Uvanav, like it's all the things around Moshe. But
well,
it's not that best word.
Yeah, it's a hard one because it's Yisro is coming. Who is he? He is the father-in-law of Moshe. Ubanav.
Right.
And his sons, I guess it's talking about Moshe's sons.
Right.
The Ishto, yeah.
But it's not, but the way
it's not smooth.
Yeah, I hear. Okay, yeah, that's definitely it's a mouthful.
The names aren't given in chronological order.
What do you mean?
Ger Hayiti Be'eretz Nachriya was after Hashem saved him from Paro, and Paro was about to cut his head off.
No,
that's actually, yeah, that's excellent. It's true. The children, right? He was saved, and then he becomes a ger in the other land. Yeah, there is Wacha. There is. I think we have it also by Ephraim and Menashe, by Menashe and Ephraim. Also that somehow like they're out of order, but what part of it is that like there is a certain sense of maybe Moshe was like happy to like just like be gone from like the whole Egypt thing and the whole Jewish thing and whatever, like he's just living there by himself away from everything.
Why didn't Paro kill Yosham? Wouldn't that have been justice?
Well, he was born in Midian.
That wasn't there.
He wasn't alive during the Kentraka?
Not in Mitzrayim.
He wasn't in Mitzrayim anyway.
So what? Paro could have done his little... He was the most powerful emperor of the time. He couldn't know that Moshe had a son.
I mean, I think...
His son gets killed. By the time
if you want to go with that, and I wouldn't necessarily recommend it, but if you wanted to go with that, What I would tell you is there is a, I don't know why, but it's on my list of like potential chaburas that will, there's like a certain, get far enough down the list, it'll never happen. But the Ramban actually, it's a beautiful, has an idea where he talks about why Moshe goes to Midian. And he says that he goes to Midian because Midian was a, I don't know how to call it. It was a satellite of Egypt. So there was a lot of back and forth, commercial like dealings, whatever. Moshe goes there because it's far enough away from Mitzrayim that he doesn't have to worry about Paro, but it's close enough that he'll know what's the going-ons of Egypt, so that he'll know when it's time to go back. That's why he ends up there. No, it's like you have to go through, I mean, Midian would be like, I would assume somewhere like Saudi Arabia-ish. You have to go like, you have to cross the entire like Sinai. But it's probably on the trade route of some sort. And it's definitely like they had what to do with each other. The reason why I don't think that Paro would really be going after Gershom is, let's assume he even knew that this kid was alive. I think he's got a lot bigger fish to fry. Like, there's a lot going on in Egypt. I don't think he has, like, the wherewithal towards the end to, like, send off someone to, like, do one of these, like, assassination attempts.
The only reason why I say is because Moshe throws down the staff, it becomes a snake. His Harkamim, they throw down a snake. You're going to kill my son, I'm going to kill your son.
Yeah, but by the time the son is dead, like I think that like the game is over. Okay, fine. So the first question that I want to go with,
I'll ask one more question. Oh, so sure. If you just look at the way the names are given, It says Ki Omar, like verbally said, and the other one is like a thought. There's no Amar. Just by it's Leinu, you know, Ki Elokei, like, but he didn't announce it. But the same concept. Right. Yeah, they're both thoughts. They're both feelings that he had, but yet one has the word Amar in it.
I take this one. I hear. Okay, good. I don't know what to do with that, but it's a good point.
You're right, but it does kind of flow if you read them together, especially with the trumpet. It flows.
All right, so the three questions that I want to try to figure out tonight. Why do we list all the descriptions of Yisro? Do we really need all that? Is it necessary? Number one. Number two, what did he hear? Vayishma Yitro. What did he hear that made him come? And number three is, how does the Pasuk end? Pasuk Aleph. Yisro hears everything that God did for Moshe. Ki Yotzi Hashem Bnei Yisrael Mimitzrayim, that he took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. What does that mean? Why that? Okay. So let's take a look at the Or HaChaim. The Or HaChaim says the following. He says, "V'ulai ki yichaveng sheva ha'ish ba'umro kohen Midian, lomar shagam shayulo bet b'chinot harmuzo b'kohen Midian." So why does it have to tell us who he is? Why do we care about all this? It's to say that he had two qualities. Shem hayoto rosh l'midyan. He was the head of Midian, right? He was like a really important person, the aduk l'avodah zara, and he was very connected to avodah zara. Afal pikein, even though he had both of those qualities, asab bet devarim negadiyim hafachiyim lebet apratim. He does two things that are counterintuitive to everything that he represents. The fact that he was Kohen Midian, what does it tell us? Chotein Moshe. By being this great guy and saying that he picks Moshe as a son-in-law, his son-in-law was a zero. Right? That's a big deal. To be... I don't think many people would see it this way, but the Or HaChaim is saying to be Yisro, who's the great of Midian, and to take a son-in-law that's a nothing at the time. Yeah, it's like that doesn't normally happen, right? People that are tends to be people that are there. They seek sons-in-law that are more impressive. And this is something that people, big people, are usually very careful about. Ve'ein tzarich lomar echad miyuchad lumato shek bilate bito l'adam b'lo shem. Right? That's how he describes Moshe, as Adam below shame, a man with no name. It doesn't seem right to do that. And yet, he does. Ukinegede yuto aduk lavod azara kemashmur avuvan mitevar kohei namar katuv mashamar v'sof anyan atayidati ki gadol Hashem mikol ukim. So the right, we later on he's kohen midyan, and what does he do? He recognizes that God was great. Okay, so
you know, I don't know what Egyptian sounds like really, or what it sounded like back then. But if you've ever heard in Great Britain, if you've ever heard the princes speak versus the common man speak, you could tell right away it's a different language.
Royal,
royal. You could hear it. They speak so. It's a whole different language. It could be that Moshe sounded like royal.
I mean, I would assume that a lot of people would feel that way. The Or Chaim clearly does not feel that way. Meaning, he feels like Yisro is like this great guy, and who does he get as a son-in-law? He gets like a refugee from Egypt, like.
He talks nicely, but has no ichus.
Yeah.
But he did save them from the Amalekim, right? He was clearly a pretty accomplished person. Even as a refugee, he wasn't scared.
His point is not that he's not going to Moshe himself. But,
yeah,
these marriages, especially with that level, are strategic and with unified and the forces and the families and the businesses and whatever. And this had none of that.
Right. I mean, I think it's just saying it's not knocking Moshe as much as it's a credit to Yisro that, unlike so many people like him, that had like this, you know, sense of, oh, I'm so great, I'm so mighty, therefore I, you know, it's beneath me to have a son-in-law who is just like a regular guy. He's okay with it. Maybe he's okay with it because he sees in this son-in-law all of those qualities. He cares and he has a sense of what of right and wrong.
You see, even from the story when Moshe saved them, because right away he asks, where is he? Why'd you leave him?
Right.
Bring him home.
Right.
Give him something to eat. So he's clearly...
Right, although the Medrash makes it a little bit like more self-serving, where it's like, come on, why did you leave him at the well? He could have been one of your husbands. But yeah, I think in the world of Pshat, it works out a lot better of like, this guy just saved you and like, you just leave him there? Like, how is that right? So, okay, we answered one of our three questions. Why do we need all this description? Why Hotzi B'nei Yisrael? Why does it have to tell us that? So the Netziv has a beautiful answer on the second page. So he's to the left of the almost impassable box to read. So he says, Ki Hotzi Hashem, De'efshar ha'yo litfoa dikyun shelahem v'yunisharim v'mitzayim. It is, they could have been freed and stayed in Egypt. The Jews could have, like, they didn't have to leave. God could have made them into the, right? That's often what happens, right? Like in revolutions, you don't leave. It's just like one group of people takes over. They usually kill a lot of people. That's like part of it. And like they're now royalty. And the people that used to be royalty are now the ones that are not. It could have been that way. Aval shama ki Hashem hotzi v'chulei. The fact that God took them out and made them free, that's where he sees the hand of God. And for that reason, Yitro comes and connects with Moshe.
What about Yosef's Atzamot?
What about them?
If they stay, then Yosef stays.
No, they're free. They're brought back, and then come back.
No, but
that was
the national destiny was to go to Israel. Hashem made this clear for generations. That was the promise. They couldn't
stay here.
Right. So his
point there is the power.
Right. I think
this was destiny.
Right. I think that what the no, but I think what the right. I think that's but that's the Netziv. I think that's the Netziv's point. Is that they didn't have to like conventional history would be. They'd say the fact that they leave is Ki Hotzi Hashem et B'nei Yisrael, that God took them out. That's what he sees. What's noteworthy of that is that's where he recognizes that there, this is something different that's going on, and perhaps that is where he sees the hand of God. Right? Like that's not what normally happens. The Egyptians would have been thrown out or whatever. They would have become like the non-ruling class. Paro would have, for sure been murdered, and Moshe would have become king of Egypt. So, but he says that was clear to him. So when he says, "Vata kisheyatzu yadak yotzi Hashem," when they came out, it was clear that this was God. Hainu lefar same kvodo v'aviyato yitbarach biolam. And his goal was then to publicize the glory of God in the world. Okay, so that gives us an answer to two of our three questions. But the real question that we're still stuck with is, what did he hear that made him come? So Rashi quite famously says the following: he hears about the splitting of the sea and the war with Amalek. Why would that make perfect sense? Well, let's think about it. What just happened in Parsha B'Shalach? Amalek is the very, very end. Like last aliyah of B'Shalach is Amalek. And what's right before that?
Splitting the sea.
Okay, there's man in the middle, but okay, fine. You have those things. So what Rashi is saying is, Yisro heard all this, and he comes. Now, the Abar Benel, sorry, this is not necessarily the most ideal way to have to do this, but we'll jump back. Take a look at the Abar Benel second page on top of the Nesivos Shalom. This is proof that most people don't have, certainly me, the patience to read the Abar Benel. You find the question, and they're like, oh, gee, I got to read 9 more questions and then figure out where is my question. So, but I think the question is a great one. He says, V'lama lo zachar sheshamat makot ha'aretz. Why didn't he say that he heard the makos? Weren't the makos impressive enough? V'tachaluesh hayu nisim atzumim. Kim milvadi yitzim mitzayim. Wasn't that?
Wait, so the Rabbanel's question is on Rashi, not on Yisro.
Yeah.
Okay.
Meaning he's saying that... Because, well, no, the Abar Benel's question is not on Rashi. His question is on the Pasuk.
Yeah,
the Pasuk says, Ki Yotzi Hashem Yisrael
Mitzrayim.
Yitzias Mitzrayim is what did. So the Abar Benel says, why? Why is that what it is?
Country was decimated.
Why couldn't it be? He saw the Makos. Right, so, but I think the Abar Benel's question, look, I put the Abar Benel's question here, David, we're on the same page, because I think the Abar Benel's question is a good question on Rashi. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Let's put 3 categories. We have the Makos, Kriyas Yamsuf, Milchemes Amalek. So which one is number 3?
Given the other 2, Amalek is in front of
us. Right, like, Amalek is not... They fought a war. It's Amalek didn't come with the entire nation. They came with a small army. And you have 600,000 men. They take the choicest of men. And what do? They don't kill Amalek. They don't destroy Amalek. They weaken Amalek, and Amalek runs away. I don't think that's like, So why is it that it's not the Makos? In fact, I think, according to the Pesach Seder, the Makos and Kriyas Yamsuf are all Makos, right? It's one is the start. One is the finish. It's just a question of where the end point is.
Not to blaspheme, but the Makos are all nice party tricks unless they get out. Now we're talking.
Right. So all I'm saying is that if I were to be writing the answer of what he heard, I would be more comfortable saying Vayishma Yitro Mashmua Shema Uva Makos, right? Eser Makot, U Kriyas Yamsuf.
Yeah, well, that's the Makos are impressive until you have Kriyas Yamsuf, and that's so much bigger than everything else. That's now the number.
Yeah, but after Kriyas Yamsuf, like, then isn't Milchemes Amalek like a big drop off?
Yeah,
no
cushion.
Yeah, so then, like, Kriyas Yamsuf?
But it's also time-wise. That was the most recent, and it was the most geographically close. We knew that.
Right. So I think that's part of the motivation of Rashi, is that also, it's the last things that happened.
And also, I think that Amalek is also probably a thorn in his side as well. Mm-hmm. Meaning, Amalek is a nomadic tribe.
Okay.
So they're pilfering from everyone. They go around. That's their life. They go around from place to place.
So he's just happy. He's like, oh, thank God, Amalek is like. No, they got there just.
Amalek didn't have a land.
No.
They didn't have, really.
Yeah, really.
They like they're kind of like they hover around the southern desert area. Sure. Like.
Why was I want nukes so badly?
Okay.
So I had a question. Yeah. On, I mean, this is a little off topic, but the parsha starts that Hashem sends them away. Lo nacham Elohim derech etz plishtim ki karov hu. God forbid there should be a war. But then he takes them in this roundabout route to avoid a war, and right away there's a war.
Yeah, but it's a little harder where they are now to like run away. They're kind of like in the middle of the desert, as opposed to if they had gone the other way, they'd be going along the coast, and just as quickly as you went up, you'd be able to go down.
But also it's like 6 million, whatever, 3 million people. It's like the fact that, yeah, they got out, but I don't know how many days it was between, you know, when they left and when Yisro comes. But to be able to sustain 3 million people in the desert for what, a week, even a week, you know, that in itself is super difficult.
Great. So that should also be a question on Rashi. Okay. Right, like now you have
that 9 a.m. club. Yeah, they're traveling well. You have
and yet fire. He picks these two things.
You got them all.
Right, so why does he pick those two things? It's a good question. So all right, so we have the Ibn Ezra, and we have the Ramban, who basically, when it comes down to it, they have a machlokas. What's their debate? Their debate is when did Yitro arrive? So let's think about this. Matan Torah is on what day?
Shavuos.
Right, which is how many days after they left Egypt?
About 49. 50. Yeah.
Seven weeks.
Yeah.
7 weeks since they left. A lot happens in those 7 weeks. Now, when is Kriyas Yamsuf?
Shmini Shel Pesach.
Seven days after they left.
Right.
So now, from Kriyas Yamsuf till Matan Torah is 6 weeks, of which about a week of it is dedicated to getting ready for Matan Torah. So now you're ready, like you've closed the window. From Kriyat Yam Suf till whatever is 5 weeks. Now, I don't have a Chumash in front of me, but I believe that after Milchemes Amalek, what happens? They have to go into the desert. So that's a little bit of traveling also. So what you're doing is like you're closing in a little bit here. But let's just assume that the fight with Amalek was, I don't know, a week and a half before Matan Torah.
Not close.
You want it to be farther? 2 weeks? I don't know.
But you know when Yisro showed up. It was right there camping at Har Sinai.
Yeah.
Right, but I'm saying, you're giving yourself very little time.
If you're interspersing
for him to hear it and come?
To hear it and get
this. Right, he has to hear Amalek it.
Before Matan Torah, you're...
Right, it's after Amalek, and he's still there by Matan Torah. How long does it take to travel through that desert? The news,
4 days.
News has to get to Midian.
From the desert.
Times 3 million. Right. They have to get the GPS location of Jews where they are.
One
person has to go to Israel, uses to come back.
Right, like, it's a good question. Like, you're creating, like, a very, very, very tight timeline.
Well, we check Google Maps. It has walking.
Right. So you're going to have to like guesstimate where foot. They need like biblical Google Maps. Like I'd like to know from ancient
Saudi Arabia,
ancient Midian
to Saudi Arabia, the Sinai Desert. I don't know.
Like, you'd have to go and get like the Atlas Das Mikra, and then you have to take like
how many centimeters
the scale, and then you have to realize that no matter what it is, it's so much more.
You can
because there's no way that there's anywhere you can get in the Middle East in a straight line.
Yeah.
So you have to go like...
That's why the major sin is that he flattens everything as they go by.
Definitely would have been easier.
But not Yisro. Yisro did it. Right, so talking about Yisro.
So, yeah. But... That's what we're dealing with. Okay, so the Ibn Ezra says as follows: Vayishma Yidro, hiskir l'mal dvar amalek ki l'refidim ba. It mentions to us Amalek because he had come to refidim. Vaytaru uya parshat b'chodesh ashlish yoktuva achar dvar amalek. So he says that the parsha of b'chodesh ashlishi Matan Torah should have really been the next parsha, Amalek, and then following right after that is Matan Torah. Kisham katuv vayisu mirefidim vayavom midbar Sinai. They go from Refidim to Midbar Sinai. Imkein lama nichnas divrei Yitro bein shtei parshio. If that's the case, why do they come? Why is Yisro the piece in the middle? Vagaon amar. The Gaon, if anybody knows who the Ibn Ezra refers to when he calls them the Gaon, happy to hear. The Gaon says that Yitro comes to Midbar Sinai before Matan Torah. Velefidati, shelo ba rak b'shana sheni achar shukam mishkan. Says the Ibn Ezra, lidati. If I had to guess, the Gaon is not the Ramban, because the Ramban certainly does not speak as nicely about the Ibn Ezra. So he says that it makes sense to me that this is actually in the second year after the Mishkan was built. Ki katuv b'parsha olu zachem elokim. They bring korbanos. There were no korbanos prior. And it says he'll teach all the laws of the Torah, but there was no, if it was before Matan Torah, there was no laws to teach. Certainly not a lot of them. V'ata, just skip down a line right by the three dots. V'ata faresh lama nichnisa parsha Yisro b'makom zeh. I'm going to explain to you why Parshas Yisro is in this place. Bavur she's kir lemalo hara'asha samalek liyisrael. He's kirat kenegdo at tovasha sa Yisrael, Yitro Yisrael. It's meant to be a contrast. You hear what Amalek would do, and therefore you need to hear what Yitro did. The bad of Amalek in contrast to the good of the Jewish people. Okay, so that is the Ibn Ezra. Says the Ramban, Vim kol zani shoel al dat hazu kishamar katuv vayishma Yitro kol asher asa Hashem l'Moshe Yisrael amok yotzi Hashem Yisrael Mitzrayim lama lo amar sheshama mashasa Moshe liYisrael matan Torah. Why not tell me, right? If the Ibn Ezra is right, vayishma Yitro, what did Yitro hear?
Not about Matan Torah.
But if the Ibn Ezra is right, he should have heard about Matan Torah.
Right.
And yet it's not. So what the Ramban says, I don't buy it. It doesn't make any sense. Shumini flow takdolo chinasulam. Is that not the greatest miracle? I don't know.
Who left the camp to spread the word?
What do you mean?
No, outside the Jews, I mean.
Right. Who's the witness that's going out to disseminate this information, telling Yisro wherever he's camped?
There's got to be some guy that walked through the desert when this is happening.
The colony of Egypt, there must have been people sending out. You know, you guys wouldn't believe what just happened.
Well, the Matan Torah, didn't make
no.
It to Matan Torah.
Yeah, I heard.
Nobody left. Arachod.
Oh, you're talking about Matan Torah.
Oh, but there were hairy Israelites walking through the desert. They talked to him. They made some trays and they kept going.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of thunder and lightning and smoke.
In the middle of the desert.
Yeah, you'd have to think that someone saw it, right?
Of course, like the World Trade Center. I don't mean to say that disrespectfully.
Yeah, I mean, you were many, 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 many miles from the World Trade Center and you saw it. So, yeah, no, I hear that. Look, I will only say this.
I've heard a philosophical question, though.
Okay.
Did everybody see that?
I mean, did all the Jews see that?
Only the Jews might have seen that.
I don't know. The thunder and the lightning? I'm not sure. I don't know.
But they saw the lightning and the thunder because it was meant for them.
Yeah. It could be. I could only say this. If it thundered in June in the desert, that's probably noteworthy. Like,
if Hashem gives snow in the middle of the desert, it happens. That what you're saying?
Pesach was early that year.
That's what you're saying. Okay.
It could be that he heard heard about crazy Amos and Amalek. All right, we should probably go check this out. And, the kids or whatever running around. And it takes a year to get out the door. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Listen, I can only say this. We've been in Israel now for 5 months. I've heard thunder 2 or 3 times only. And Malachi only heard it once. It's a little bit uncommon.
I was
on my way to shul. I don't know.
That's good.
It was like weird. Like we all of a sudden heard her. She's like, Shikoho.
It could have been F-15.
Yeah. No, I think you can tell the difference. We get that also every once in a while. Or because there's no airplanes that go over Beit Shemesh. So if there's airplanes, it's like something from the army. Okay, so the Ramban wants to know. He says, I understand. Like, was there nothing greater than Matan Torah? So he says, Kemoshen Emar, Kishal Nal Yamim Arishunim Shayu Lefanechom and Yom HaShabar Elokim Adam Ala Aretz Mekseh Shemayim Mekseh Shemayim Haniyeh Kadavar Agadol Azeh Unishmak Amo. Right? In Vayeschan, and it says, there was nothing like this. Hear God speak, it's impossible.
But it goes on. The next pasuk.
Yeah.
Do you understand
what he's saying? My
kids would be like, what's he talking about?
The next pasuk talks about the rest of Yetzias Mitzrayim, I would think.
Okay.
So why is he only bringing up the esh, everything at Matan Torah?
Well, he's saying that the
Correct,
but then why does the pasuk continue to tell the rest of the stuff? It's including everything. It's not just including Matan Torah.
That's
the climax of everything. Right, that's like we get all the way up to Matan Torah.
Yeah, I mean, I would.
It's a train. The Makos.
Right. I guess I would want to look at the psukim there before I could fully, say anything about that. So, okay, fine. So what happens? The Ramban continues. Gishamar v'yisaper Moshe l'chudu kol asher asal Hashem l'faro mitzayim alodot yisrael kol t'lasher mitzatam aderech. So Moshe talks to his father-in-law. He tells him all the things that happened. Again, no mention of Matan Torah. V'amar yitro mizat hayadati ki gadol Hashem. Now I know how great God is. Lama lo siper lo mamad har Sinai. Talk about Sinai. And that is the way we know that God is one and only.
That's
all
that's
fine. So, v'ulai nemar, maybe you want to suggest the following. Sheshama Yitro Bartso. Yitro heard in his land. What did he hear? He heard until Amalek. What does he do?
He starts moving.
He leaves before Matan Torah, and he arrives after Matan Torah.
There are no newspapers on the way.
I guess not.
Well, it's those two things that cause him to go. Whether he right. he might have right. heard about Matan
Torah. So how, after Matan Torah, how long did they camp at Har Sinai?
2 years. Oh. Or no, till the second year. And when does he leave, by the way? In the second year.
It doesn't mean that he didn't hear about Matan Torah. He just didn't hear about it.
But that wasn't meaning that was not what moved him. He moved because of Kriyas Yamsuf. Maybe that's why he found it so easily. He was like, I'm looking for the Jews. Wait, laser light show over there. Right. All right? Fine. Okay. So
no, he turned to his wife and said, "Did you hear that thunder?"
She's like, "You're mad." Yeah. Okay, so that's the machloket between the Ramban and Ibn Ezra. Did he come? Did he arrive? Did he hear before or after Matan Torah? And it's the Ramban that so beautifully like straddles the fence by saying he hears before, he arrives after. All right, so Now let's take a look at the Nesiva Shalom. Wow. So sorry.
Do you want to take a picture with your phone and blow it up? Or should I do that for you?
I think I'm gonna, I hope I'll be okay. Okay, Vayishma Yitro, Chohen, Midian, Chotein, Moshe, Kol Asher, Asa, Hashem, L'Moshe, L'Yisrael, Amo, Ki Otsi Hashem, Yisrael, Mimitzayim. Uberashi Mevi, Mamara, Mechilta. So Rashi quotes the Mechilta. Oh, thanks. Yeah, that was a little bit better. Rashi quotes the Mechilta. Mashmua Shema Uva, Kriyat Yamsuv, Milchem, and Malik. Okay, we did this already. Uperishu Bazam, Farshim, Shekavana, Midrash, Beikarhi, Mashmua Shema Uva. The Medrash is trying to understand what moved him to come. Shalom mefurash pasuk amasha shama. The truth is, the pasuk tells us what he heard. What makes him come? Ki yotzi Hashem when he saw him in time. Elamahi vioto lavo. What brings him there? What makes him feel like he has to come? Demasha shama ki yotzi Hashem when he saw him in time. Ein ze matzrich lavo. Just hearing that the Jews went out of Egypt doesn't require him to go. It's just enough to be happy. Yay, the Jews won! What is the answer that Rashi is giving? Rashi is saying, Vayishma'idro, Yitro heard. What did he hear? He heard these things. Why does that make sense? Asks the Nesiva Shalom. Madua zekein chivuhu lavo. Why did it require him to come? The itav zeh mimaran bal divrei Shmuel zchuso yagen aleinu. This is what the one of the Hasidish from the I think the Slonimer dynasty said. She Yitro shamaki lachar kriyat yamsuf od yichod laliyot milcham amalek. Yitro heard that after a kriyas yamsuf there could be a milcham amalek. She gamachar shekol olam nizdazeya bekriyat yamsuf. The whole world was shaking. Amalek is able to come with such heresy and do this. He was blown away that such a thing could exist, and after that he felt that if he was to be machzik his emuna, if he was to hold on to his emuna, he had to go. If he had stayed where he was, eventually he too could become a kofir. Thank you very much. That was incredibly helpful.
No problem.
He had to come as a Jew. So the Nesiva Shalom then goes on, and this is the first paragraph of the article. He goes on for like two pages. But basically what he says is, he cannot believe that an Amalek could exist after God was so clear. But this is what he realized. You can have a clear vision of God, and that's great. And that will take you to a certain place. Shamu Amir Gazun, the whole world, they all shook, they all were nervous, they were all scared. But then the moment passed. He realized that the only way to sincerely remain committed to God was to live in a community of people that had the same belief.
But yet he left.
And so that's why he comes. Why he leaves afterwards, he might have gone, according to the Medrash, he went to go get his family and to be misguided or all of them.
But he didn't come back ever.
We don't know that.
They didn't write about it.
I mean,
but his whole family, they're from, right? Like we.
You don't think in the next 38 years, if he came back again, like there would have been mention of it?
Yeah,
like,
I didn't find him.
More light show.
So that's
just a fire.
So that's the pshat of the Nesiva Shalom. He says that if a person wants to be successful, it's not enough just to be inspired, which is great. But they actually have to do, it's not even enough to be inspired and to do something. You have to be inspired, do something, and then put yourself in a community of believers.
Very Hasidish.
Why?
That's exactly what.
No, but I'm saying I think that's a Litvish concept also. The idea, right? All of us hold that.
Yeah.
You can't be successful
living
all by yourself. It's just impossible. There's a I remember years ago, like at the onset of like online Torah, Rabbi Bravender, I think, was like giving shiurim online, which was like, but they were live shiurim. It wasn't like YU Torah. It was, you were like on a screen, you know, whatever. We didn't call it Zoom back then. It was called something else, whatever. So he made a student in like the middle of Poland. I was like, this guy lived in a like place completely by himself. And he, unfortunately, the guy got very sick and was like undergoing some serious like cancer treatments. And Rabbi Bravender came to learn with him in Poland itself. And his message to him was like, you're not by yourself. Like, there's a community that supports you, that's with you and all that. I think it's an amazing thing, because I think we live in a world where like the walls are down and it's a lot smaller, and you could have a sense of community that becomes like, even, you know, like through boxes on a screen, like we remain a community. But then Nesiva Shalom was saying that from Yitro's perspective, he couldn't stay where he was. He felt, if I stayed where I am, what's going to happen to me? In all likelihood, before you know it, I'm going to be not that much different than a Malek. And so he picks up and he leaves.
So, but was he Kofor before?
Was who Kofor before?
Yisro.
I mean, he was an Oved Avodah Zarah, so I guess.
But that's back to being ignorant.
I guess.
What was his exposure? He didn't bump into Avram. He didn't bump into a Jew. He lived in the middle of Midian.
Okay. So, but now...
But I'm afraid that if I don't... Like, to go from being, I don't know, impartial to being a Kofor or whatever, yeah, that's... I mean, he's not going to turn himself... He didn't turn himself Malik just by living where he was.
Isn't there a midrash that says that Yisro became monotheistic before Moshe even got there?
Yeah, that's why his daughters are the ones by the well getting water. Right, he had moved past that.
Some say he became monotheistic before Moshe even got to his house first time.
Right, I think.
Oh, right, so how's he turning into a Kofor? I'm with you.
He's saying that to be truly a ma'amin, the way you're supposed to be, is you need people with you. You need a like-minded community.
He always felt the
pull. He only needed... So even the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach, he couldn't do unless he's a like-minded community.
He didn't want to do the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach. He wanted to have, like, absolute clarity of God. So he has to join up with the Jewish people. That is what the Nesiva Shalom says. And I think that then answers all of our questions. What does he hear? He hears Kriyas Yamsuf and Matan Torah. Kriyas Yamsuf and Milchemes Amalek. Why? Says the Nesiva Shalom, Rashi is telling us that the reason for that is those two events shook him to the core, that you could have someone that believed, the whole world believed, and so quickly afterwards not believe, and he decides for himself that he's not going to allow himself to fall for the same thing.